We're still in the 23rd chapter of Joshua. And in this chapter, Joshua is giving one of his last speeches to the General Assembly of the leaders of Israel. He has been warning them about not being unfaithful to God, telling them of the good things God has done for them and of the good things God will do for them yet, and exhorting them to continue to be faithful to God. And so it continues along this same theme, beginning with the 11th verse. He says, "Take heed therefore unto yourselves, that you love the Lord your God." Now this verse is a good description of the steps that a person must take in order to be acceptable to God in the area of religion. The first thing he said is, "Take good heed therefore unto yourselves." We have to continually watch our actions, watch our thoughts, watch our beliefs and our practices. We have to take heed unto ourselves. First step toward leaving God, towards sin, towards getting out of the true fold of God is to become careless. Become careless with what we think and do, to not pay any attention to what the consequences of our actions are going to lead to become careless in the kind of company that we have, and to fail to do what he says here when he says, "Take good heed therefore unto yourselves." So let's be continually watching what we're doing ourselves. Let's be continually monitoring and evaluating and applying our actions to what is right and what is wrong, so that we know just where we stand at all times. "Take heed therefore unto yourselves, that you love the Lord your God." Now, this is the whole duty of man, of course, is to love God. We must do nothing that would in any wise bring about any kind of harm to God. We work no ill to God, no ill to His will, to His way, to His desire for us, no ill to His word, no ill to His plan for the salvation of man. So this is really an all-inclusive statement here, and we are to love the Lord our God. The word love simply means to work no ill to your neighbor, as defined in Romans 13 and 10. And when you apply that then to the Lord your God, it means you're going to work no ill to God. You're going to do nothing that will bring about any harm to the things of God. And that is a big order, but nevertheless, it is the order of those who would follow after God. So there's a lot in this little 11th verse. "Take heed therefore unto yourselves, that you love the Lord your God." And so anything they would do outside of the rim of what God wanted them to do would be something that could be interpreted as an act that was not the love of the Lord your God. You're doing something else besides loving God when this happens. So he says in verse 12, "Else, if you do in any wise go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them, and go in unto them, and they to you, know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you." Now, he gives them a strong warning as to what will happen if they take the first step towards apostasy. He says, if you in any wise go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations, this is the first step toward ruin, is to begin to take up with the company of sinners. Because when you take up with the company of sinners, when you cleave to them, then the first thing you know, you're going to be cleaving to sin. Sin is in their lives. Sin is involved with their attitudes, their morals, their values. And consequently, if you take up their ways, then you're going to be taking up their sin in one way or another. You're going to have to somehow or other embrace it, compromise with it, allow it. And first thing you know, you may even be committing it. So this is a grave warning here. Do not go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations. God has given you all that you need to cleave to. He's given you all the commands as to how to worship Him, as to how to live, as to how to practice. You have a full life just observing the things of God. You do not have to declare that you have a void in your life and have to fill it up with these things of the world. God has given you sufficient. You're to love His Word. You're to talk about it when you lay down and when you stand up and when you walk and when you sit down. You're to talk about it with your children. You're to write it over the doorpost. All these things of God are designed to completely fill your life. And then when you go back and start cleaving or attaching yourselves to these nations that live among you, these people that are idolatrous, these people that have practices that come from their traditions, and there is no true God that has ever given any of the rules and laws by which they live, and yet you're going to take these up, you're going to let them become a part of you in the place of what God has given, then this is the way to ruin. So he says, if you do in any wise, go back and cleave unto the remnant of these nations. Now, he didn't say you have to totally give yourself to these nations. He said in any wise, just any form, any fashion, any degree of it. It says, even these that remain among you, and shall make marriages with them. Now, that's the next step. Once you begin to associate with and cleave to and be a part of the community around about you in social things, then the next thing is you're going to make marriages with them. Your children will be marrying their children. And he says, go in unto them and they unto you. This is a very grave step now towards getting away from God. Once a marriage is made out of the church or out of the realm of God's people, then so many, many things are brought to bear to turn you away further from God. The very attendance of the worship services become a major chore then, because the spouse usually is not interested and doesn't want to help to attend to that. The raising of the children in God becomes another major chore, because the spouse may turn them in a different direction from the direction God would have them to go. On and on, many, many problems arise because of it. And it's a principle taught throughout the Bible that God does not intend for His people to marry outside of His people. So, he says in verse 13, that if these things happen, know for a certainty that the Lord your God will no more drive out any of these nations from before you. If you decide to embrace them, if you decide to cleave to them, if you decide to take up their ways, then God is not going to do anything more towards driving them out. He will not make Satan flee. He will not make sin run. He will not give you the victory over sin until you have the desire to do it yourself. You must desire this. These principles work as long as you apply them. But the very instant you stop applying these principles, they stop working. They don't coast any. They stop right there. God stops driving out any more of these nations from among you or from before you. These nations are going to stand. These nations are going to become stronger. These nations are going to be there as a snare and traps. But they shall be snares and traps unto you. They're going to be there to make life harder for you. They're going to be there to interfere even more with your religion and your service to God. There'll be snares and traps and scourges in your sides. To be scourged was to be beaten with a whip that had thongs in it. Scourges in your sides and thorns in your eyes. Can you imagine having thorns in your eyes? This would blind you. It'd make it not only painful for you, impossible for you to see. You could not see what was right and what was wrong. Could not see which direction you were going. Thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you. So the way toward ruin is to take up with these nations that have remained among you that God's promised He will drive out. But if you take up with them rather than drive them out, then God's not going to drive any more of them out. They're going to stay right there. They're going to be snares and traps. They're going to be scourges in your sides. They're going to be thorns in your eyes. And this is going to remain until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. At this time, the Israelites were reigning supreme. They had taken over the land. They were the rulers of the land. And so there was nobody that was really able to overrule what they wanted to have done. So naturally, the Canaanites would be very good to them. They would play up to them. They would flatter them and do all that they could to get on their good side. But they really secretly and deep down inside detested the Israelites. And if the time ever came when the shoe would be on the other foot, when they could overrule them, when they could again gain back their territory, they would gladly do that. And so there would eventually come a time then that these people that God had allowed to live in this land, His people, would perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. They were going to be driven off of it. And as we see the later course of history, a couple of hundred years on down the line, this was happening. And they were driven off. They were taken off the land. And they were taken into captivity. And this land became absolutely none of their possession whatsoever. And God promises that's going to happen if you turn away from me. If you become unfaithful to me. If you make alliances with these people. If you intermarry with them. If you do not cleave to me and love me and take heed to yourselves, you're going to be taken off from this good land that I've given you. Now in the midst of all this, in verse 14, Joshua proceeds to tell them that he's not going to be with them always. He's about come to the end of his time on this earth. And they're not going to have him. They're going to have to do without him. But they can adequately do this by simply remaining faithful to God. So it says in verse 14, "And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth." Now, what does he mean when he says, "I'm going the way of all the earth"? He simply means that it's appointed unto man to die. It matters not how great man is. It matters not how wise he is. It matters not how powerful he is. He must die. Death is the way of all the earth. Death is the great leveler. Death is the thing that we will all have in common. And Joshua says, "I am going the way of all the earth. I'm going to have to die just like everybody else." He's getting close to that time. It's probably in his last year of life right now when he's making this statement before the assembly of Israel. And so he's preparing the people for the fact that he's not going to be with them. He's not going to be their leader much longer. But God is going to continue to do all the things he's promised to do. And so their life's not going to be disrupted. They're going to be just as well off without Joshua as before because of the fact that God will be continually working on their behalf. So he says, "I'm going the way of all the earth, and you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing hath failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, and not one thing hath failed thereof." So everything God had promised has come to pass among them. Now he had promised them that he was going to give them this land, that they were going to get across the Jordan River, that they would be given rest, that he would fight their battles for them, that they would be victorious, that they would be a great nation. All these things he'd promised them have come to pass. He had given them a place of worship. He had given them a priesthood. He had given them the altar and the sacrifices and the Ark of the Covenant. He had made a covenant with them. He had given them a law. All these things God had done for them. Not one thing had failed of all the things God had promised. They had all been given to them. And it was all contingent, of course, upon their being obedient to Him. And as soon as they do their part, God has more than adequately done His part. Everything He's promised, He's done. Nothing has failed. So all they have to do is just look at their history, their brief history, their very recent history, and see how faithful God is. And when you see then that God is so faithful, this gives you more confidence to be able to face whatever lies in the future. God has done it in the past. He'll do it again in the future. And as we look into our lives and see what God has done for us, just the fact that we have an existence here upon this earth, the fact that we have what we have, whatever that may be, we can give thanks to God for it, and we can feel confident then that God's going to continue to provide for us in the future as He has in the past, and what an abundance that is. We have a very similar thought to this expressed in Hebrews 10, verse 23, where the Apostle Paul says, "Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised." Whatever promises God has given to us today, he is just as faithful today to bring about those promises, the fulfillment of those promises, today as he was back in the days of Joshua. And it all depends, though, upon our holding fast the profession of our faith. The thing that we have professed to, the things that we have confessed to, we're to hold fast to it. If we become lax, if we do not take heed unto ourselves, if we fail to love the Lord as he describes through Joshua, then the promise will be void. God does not have to be faithful to something that we no longer have made valid ourselves. And so he says, hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering. We cannot vacillate back and forth. We cannot spend a little bit of time with the world and then a little bit more time with God. That's wavering back and forth. We're to hold fast to it without wavering. And then he is faithful that promised. Same promise to us today as Joshua gave to his people on this occasion in Joshua chapter 23. So verse 15 says, "Therefore it shall come to pass that as all good things are come upon you, which the Lord your God promised you, so shall the Lord bring upon you all evil things, until he have destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God hath given you." And he's simply saying here that just as surely as God is faithful to keep his promise, to bring the good things that he's promised, and these things are conditional, they're conditional upon their being faithful to him, that just so surely he shall also bring all the evil things that he's promised. And that is also conditional, based upon the fact that they refuse to be faithful to him, based upon the fact that they start making acquaintances and have intimate relation with the people around about them and allow the intermarrying and allow the ways of these people to rub off on them and to separate them from God, then God will bring you all evil things until he have destroyed you from off the good land which the Lord your God has given you. That's the ultimate destruction that's going to be happening in this life. They're going to be taken off of this land that God's given them. Now all this time he is spent leading up to getting them to this land. They're 400 years of captivity in Egypt. They're 40 years in the wilderness. And then they're going in and driving out the nations. And he finally gave them the land. He says, all these things I've done, just as surely, I'm going to take them away from you. I'm going to drive you off from this good land if you're not faithful to me. So verse 16, "When you have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods, and bowed yourselves to them, then shall the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you." Now we must realize that to have anything to do with idolatry is more than just committing a sin out of weakness, a sin out of human frailty, but it is actually transgressing the covenant of the Lord our God. His covenant becomes invalid because that covenant is like a marriage contract. And for one of the marriage partners to simply fall a little bit short, maybe they don't keep the house clean, or maybe they don't bring home quite enough money, maybe they're late to work, maybe they forget a little thing that they promised to do. These are shortcomings, all right, but they're easily forgivable and easily correctable. But for one of the marriage partners to go out and take another man or another woman in the place of their spouse, that then is violating the marriage contract. That's violating the covenant. That's breaking the covenant. And so that's what happens whenever we go off into idolatry. We break the covenant that we've made with God. We've taken another God in his place. We put somebody else in his place. And then this violates all the agreement with God. And that's what he's talking about here when he says, when you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and gone and served other gods and bowed yourself to them. Now we have to be most careful that this doesn't happen today, because we have other gods on every hand today. All the remnants of idolatry are still round about us and are very muchly being practiced by those who claim to be Christians. The paganistic holidays, such as the Halloween, which we call Halloween, that's very muchly practiced today. It's perpetuated by the schools, and it seems that we just cannot have that time in November to come around without the people having to practice and go about those things that come from pure paganism and idolatry. The other religious holidays that have been put into the apostate church, which they borrowed from paganism, are also very prevalent round about us. We cannot get through the winter solstice, the time around the end of December, without being so bombarded by all of the practices that go along with paganism and idolatry that have to do with the celebration of the winter solstice that they now call the Christ Mass. We have to be most careful that these things do not rub off on us and become a part of us, and we do not give any kind of heed or credence to them at all. Do not attribute any kind of power to them, because they do not come from God. They're not taught us by God. We're not instructed to do them by God. And they come from the traditions of man. They come from things that have been handed down from paganism. And if we allow ourselves then to be engrossed in those things, if we allow those things to become a part of us, so that we're practicing them and we're promoting them and we are perpetuating them ourselves, then you can see where we stand in the face of God. We're going to have His anger kindled against us because we are then tampering with the covenant. We're playing with another God. We are being unfaithful to God. We're making God jealous. And when we tamper with the covenant that we made with God and we violate that and we make that null and void, then God has no more obligation to us. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.